Oh, you're not doing your intro today?
No, I wasn't. And we hadn't prepared it, had we? Sorry, I've been writing by the show. England didn't win the Test Series. And are probably unlikely to do it. Has only one team ever come back from 2-0 down in the history of Test cricket? Is that right? Is it Bradman's team?
I think so.
I can't think of it.
Well, England nearly did it in the previous Ashes.
No, teams
and the
have
Manchester.
Drawn before. I don't know. Yeah. If, yeah, but that's not coming back to win a series, mate. That's a draw. Oh. Mm-hmm. I think teams have come back to draw before. I don't think anyone's ever come back. It's not our smoothest intro.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is Third Innings Live. You're with Jared and Behram. We're here to review day four of the GABA test. And it was a bit of a bloodbath in this game, wasn't it, after day one, Jared?
Yeah, actually, you know, we can put the rush line thing up on the screen now just to show the win predictor on the AI, which we thought at times was a bit soft on Australia, but they had Australia ahead the whole way. They had a brief period there where England almost got level. And other than that, look at the gap between these two sides. It's funny, actually, when the first session happened, there were some people, you know, Cheyenne in our chat was just like, oh, if England do this and do that. And I was like, what are you talking about? They're going to have to bat in the dusk. We're against the second new ball. Like, the chances of it happening are so low. But yeah, I think as rush line, and I'm sure that, you know, a lot of the win predictors would have had this. I don't know if anyone would have had Australia in behind at any stage, but it was maybe briefly close. Behram, is that the best way of putting it?
Yeah, if you can see that one point where both of those worms meet each other, that's what we're looking at, where, you know, they were predicting or maybe thought England had a likelihood of winning this test match. We all thought there was a chance after day one, obviously, because they got that last wicket partnership between Jofra and Root.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, in an alternate universe where England do hold on to their catches because they dropped five, right? Maybe this would have been more of a contest. But I mean,
it's actually quite, you know, from a cricket point of view, it's a bit romantic, isn't it? That like Australia did what England couldn't do, which is just kept the pressure on them that first session. So when Boland and Stark were batting in the first session the other day, England didn't really keep the pressure on them. They just allowed them to do what they were doing, right? Mm. And Australia were happy with that. Today, Australia kept the pressure on them, despite the fact, again, the pitch really died down when the sun was on it, right? But the big difference is that Australia kept the pressure on, and eventually when the edge came, Steve Smith takes a worldie catch at first slip.
Yeah.
And that is the difference, right? Australia is more patient, they are more skillful, and they don't drop catches out their arse all the time.
They dropped one, right? The Nisa caught and bowled, and then there are a few worldies in there.
There was the Travis Head drop at short leg and the Nisa one. I think both of those are...
Yeah.
Like five, you know, I don't know what, maybe Nisa's is a 15% chance catch. And I don't know what Head's was, maybe like a 3%. That was flying.
Yeah.
But yeah, your point remains. And also, you know, it's a couple of drops is a normal part of it. It's England dropped five catches in 73 overs. It's probably less than that. But 73 overs is the point that I looked that stat up.
Also, like Australia take a fair few worldies, whereas Will Jacks was England's only contributor, right? There's the Marnus catch. There's the Smith catch. The one-handed take, and then the Carey and Marnus duo catch. Also, the run-out. Josh Ingles' run-out.
I think Carey's best catch is probably the one off Stokes.
Yeah. Right?
Which is probably the one standing that cements the game. I mean, that bounced a little bit extra, and I thought that was a fantastic catch. I really did. They just, they just looked like a better side all the way through, and they did it without all their best players. Like, they're missing four genuine frontline players from this side. One is dropped, so they've made that decision. But even so, four of their automatic team members of what's a year ago, three guys who are, one guy who was the best opening bat in the world for a couple of years, one guy who is, fighting, off Dennis Lilly to be one of the best seam bowlers Australia's ever had. Josh Hazlewood, who's been the second best informed seam bowler in the world over the last couple of years, and their second highest wicket taker in cricket. Like, it's ridiculous that has happened, and yet England have been, smashed in the face, kicked in the ass, at both at the same time.
Yeah, blown to smithereens, but it's very fascinating.
All of those things.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'll give them Khwaja, right? That's not as big a miss because he's past his prime. I don't think there's another peak coming in his cluster.
No, so you're right. You're right. But we came into this series going, what's Australia's top three? And is it going to make any runs? Right?
True.
And so losing Khwaja could have been the final sort of, domino to fall for just like, who knows? Maybe Head goes to the top of the order and just fails a bunch of times. right? Yeah. Like, and now they don't have Head in the middle order, right? Weatherall was making his debut. What if he didn't make any runs in his first two test matches, which is a totally normal thing for a test opening batter in the last 5 years to do? It could have all crumbled. So even though you're right, there's still an element of, you're talking about, this is not the full strength Australian side, and yet they have dominated that test, right? And they, the last one, England were even further, were massively in front, and Australia still won it in a dominant fashion. Like, it's ridiculous how easy they have won these test matches.
Yeah, I mean, look, even if Khwaja wasn't in form, you're right that the team got destabilized. And then Cummins and Hazelwood are as big misses as you could imagine. Despite that, what, 40 wickets and 18 have gone to Stark? So Mitchell Stark has been player of the match in back-to-back games. Of course, you know, the margin of victory also needs to be spoken of, because it's not just like regular wins. Australia have literally smashed England, right? In the previous test match, they chased down 205 in 28.2 overs. That was also an 8-wicket win. Today was also an 8-wicket win. This comes in 4 days. So, you know, double the time as the last one. But like, the manner in which England just, you know, kind of lost the plot mid-game or day two, perhaps, I feel like it's going to be really hard for them to kind of claw their way back into the series. A, only one team has done it, as you said, coming back from 2-0 down to win a 5-match test series. And then it's just the psychological blow and the media noise that is going to come about now. I mean, they're probably done and dusted in the series, and I would be happy to be proven wrong. I want them to be competitive. But did you see how they had like a poll going on at the Gabba, where it was Bluey versus Peppa Pig? Bluey wins that hands down, but this was,
Peppa Pig sucks ass, man. Yeah. I hate Peppa Pig so much. It is.
Which was the bigger non-contest? Bluey versus Peppa Pig or Australia versus England?
I actually feel sorry for a Peppa Pig to have to go up against Bluey. I don't know. Yeah. Like, as a father who is, now on his third child, I've watched so much children's TV, and Peppa is by far one of the worst. Don't get me started on Paw Patrol. That is absolute ass. But Peppa is terrible. Look, we thought they would lose this test match, and they lost this test match, right? The issue again is that Root makes 100. They get themselves into day two. They make over 300 in the first innings. They had Australia in trouble once with the ball. Even if you forget the drop catches, they had Australia once in trouble with the ball, and they just find ways to be shit. Right. And they have consistently found ways to be shit. And I was worried about the skill of their bowling attack coming in, and obviously spoke about it at length. They look so like, for whatever I had them graded on skill level, they look so much lower than that now. Much lower than that, right?
Since you're talking about this, I just want to bring this up. Varun and I did some homework, and we can't not talk about this. There literally is a Jofra Archer tweet for everything. This is from March 2013. Jofra has tweeted Steve Smith 23 of 9. There were a few words exchanged between the two. To quote Steve Smith, he said, "Bowl fast when the game's gone," something like that. Champion.
Yeah, champion. You've got to remember the champion, because that's the actual insult there is the champion. It's not the original thing. Well, let's just go through it. So I think we have enough history on Jofra now to know that he just cannot bowl consistently at that pace. This isn't about effort or anything else. His body just stiffens up. Right. And he's not the first bowler in test cricket history for this to happen to. Right. But everything has to be completely right for him. And when it is, he looks dynamic. And when it isn't, he needs the pitch to assist him. We saw him take six for at Headingley years ago when he wasn't bowling at full pace. He has the ability to do that, but he needs some assistance. The issue is that they needed the gut busting spell. And I don't think he can consistently do it. So there's a question mark over probably their most skillful bowler. Right. Certainly that they've used in this series. Mark Wood is 36, hasn't played a game in forever, played one game and is back out of the side.
Yep.
Still a really good test bowler, but if you only play one in three test matches at best, I don't know what you do with that. The whole world seems to now have gone from thinking I was unfair on Atkinson to actually thinking I'm pro Atkinson, right? They have turned so much on Atkinson. The issue I have with Atkinson at the moment, he's probably not the same one as everyone else. I'm sure everyone else is like, he doesn't take wickets. I think my big issue with Atkinson at the moment is I didn't realize how many runs per over he goes for. A guy who's bowling 88 miles an hour, angled in at the stumps, who's pretty accurate, should not be going at over four runs and over. Mm. Even with England's laissez-faire attitude to keeping the runs down, right? Kaas. Yeah. Kaas I was higher on, and I really was interested to see how he would go in Australia at times. He took the wickets in this one, But you cannot rely on Kass
for
a long period of time.
He's going to go for runs, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there are times when I don't think he was putting the ball anywhere near where he wanted to put the ball. Yeah.
At least he bowled fast when there was something going on.
Yeah, no. That's the thing with Kass. But again, to go back to the Jofra point, Kass has the same issue as Jofra. Remember in the India series when he kept hurting his toe and he couldn't bowl at full pace, right?
Yeah.
So again, we have another guy who can bowl very fast and can be a very intimidating bowler, but can also not do that because his body doesn't allow him to do it, right? Tung, it seems like they're softened on Tung. I don't know if that's the right analogy, but...
They have to go towards Tung now that the wood is soft. That's the right analogy.
They didn't go to Tung when the wood was soft. So you've then got Tung, who they are... I think Tung and Kass are sort of interchangeable. I'm not sure either of them are, you know... You want them to be your third or fourth best bowler, I would have thought, in most sides, right?
Yeah.
Jax, they've brought in. They clearly don't think he's worth bowling. Because I think if Lyon had played in this test, he would have bowled a lot more, I think, considering what the pitch was like and everything else. So they've got Jax there. And Jax is in because they didn't want to try Bashir. Right? True. So,
and Bashir is the guy who they literally pick for his high release point. And I mean, now where's his career?
Don't blame on the two bounciest wickets.
Yeah, headed. Because these were the two venues where you play the spinner with the high release point, right?
So who's next on that list? Potts, Cook... Who else am I missing?
Ollie Robinson's still alive?
Ollie Robinson is somewhere. Like, there are issues, and we knew those coming in. One thing we weren't as sure about was how flat the pitches were going to be. This is the pitch, again, I would say so far, England could still win a test. Who knows what happens in the rest of the series? They could certainly still win tests from here just because they've been in these games. I think it's hard. I think 5-0 is certainly fast loading at this point. But you look at their team, the actual kind of bowling attack they have was probably in the end most suited to the flat pitch for this game and the spicy fast pitch for the Wacker. For Perth Stadium. One day I'll get that right.
Optus. The correct word is Optus.
No, we don't use Optus. Don't use Optus. Because in 5 minutes' time, they'll change it from Optus to something else. You never do that with Australian stadiums. Never use the sponsor's name. Perth Stadium, right? Docklands and Perth Stadium. Those are the names, right? So those were the attacks that they were best suited to, right? And they've been out-bowled by Doggett and Nisa, right? And Green got a wicket at one stage as well. Like Green and Atkinson have almost the same amount of wickets in the series, I think. I think that's right. They both have one, don't they?
No. Atkinson now has three.
Got two. Yeah. He got more, didn't he, today? Yeah.
Bumble is on the counter.
Bumble's back. So you look at that and you go, these are the games that should have suited them, right? And at times, Kass still got wickets, right? They got themselves into a good position in the first innings in this game if they'd been able to close off that innings. They certainly got themselves in a great position in the first test. But in every stage, even when their bowlers haven't been shit, their batters, which is supposed to be their strength, have been even shitter than you would think they could have possibly have been. Like, they really have gone to a level of shitness that I think it would have been hard to predict they would be this bad after two games.
I definitely did not see that one coming, right? I mean, if you think about it, one of their best batting performances was today. It's the first innings in this test match, and then it's today. Like, at one point, you were like, okay, how long can Will Jackson Stokesy stretch this, right? They're clearly showing some resistance. And Cheyenne said something in this group, which I found to be quite beautiful. He said, Australia out-bazballed England and then forced England to anti-bazball, which is essentially what they do.
That line was good. I'd finished my piece and I saw that message and I was like, I quickly just cut and paste it and put it in the piece. You're right. Yeah. That's a perfect thing. And I wrote my feature on the main page is very similar. Of the first thing I asked the group was, what's the runs per over in this test match? Because we know that Australia was just way quicker than England, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that it finished with Steve Smith hitting a six, right? It just, you know, and that, again, shows how much England has been involved in changing test cricket, right?
I wonder if
Australia were really defensive a couple of years ago. Do you remember? We were talking about it all the time, how defensive they were.
We use the word pragmatic for Pat Cummins, but do you remember Crick Info used to have, I know this is a big tangent, but Crick Info used to have this section with quotes?
Mm-hmm.
They would just quote people. I wonder if Steve Smith would have made it to that, or if they still do that. But bowl fast when there's nothing going on, champion, definitely. You know, I feel like that's going to be talked about for years to come, because Jofra still has not dismissed Smudger. This is news.
So Seven Cricket put up a quote that I think will also be on this, by the way, which is they said, and I haven't seen this because I've been working since the game finished, but it said that Brendan McCullum is quoted as saying on Seven Cricket's channel thing, and there's a picture of him holding a microphone and speaking. So I can only assume this is correct and someone just hasn't sent me a fake. And the reason I say it might be a fake is because what I'm about to say to you, Bayram, is McCullum said, leading into this test match, I actually think we over-prepared, to be honest.
Oh, there's a super chat on this as well. I saw that super chat. Let me bring that up real quick.
We over-prepared.
Yeah, there we go.
So there's
neutral
this is
standpoint.
A Canadian who's so angry with this, right? I don't. What time is it in Canada? I don't even know what time is this man's life, and he's like, I like this toxic positivity.
I think it's like 6 a.m. in Canada, something like that. But yeah, neutral standpoint says, what the fuck? Are they delusional or is it toxic positivity? You predicted Stark will win this test on his own. Yeah, I mean, anyone could have done that. Yeah, he scores 77 runs. He picks up 8 wickets. I mean, it was all Stark. He's been back-to-back player of the match, right, in this series. And I mean, look, I'm not sure what he means by overprepared, because they didn't even opt to play the pink ball game that was available to them.
Yeah, so I think that's him trying to get ahead of the narrative, isn't it? And look, remember that this is something we all have to learn. And as fans, no one cares about this, but it is a true
Okay,
thing.
But Jared, before you say that, the Roo brothers and Emilio Gay were better prepared for this test match. Right?
But what I was going to say is that, like, from that perspective, the way that England talk when they say things publicly is not for the fans, right? And it is not for the press. That's generally what most countries do when they talk publicly. McCullum is saying that to the team. It's still nonsense, don't get me wrong. And it could be toxic positivity. But he might be saying that they put too much pressure on themselves. I don't think this is directly about the fact that they knocked back the day-night game. If they played in the day-night game, I think you can actually make pretty valid arguments that the day-night game wasn't going to help them. It's on the wrong kind of pitch. They probably didn't want to tire out their bowlers. Maybe their batters could have played, but, you know, I understand. A lot of teams don't like touring games anymore, right? Like, just in general. I understand all of that stuff. I think you can be as negative as you want on that and everything else. But this is not a team that is known for over-preparing. It is a team that is known for under-preparing. So much so that I believe one of the reasons they haven't managed to fix their catching over the last few years is because they don't train as hard as other teams, right?
True.
They don't put the time and effort into this in the way that other teams do.
Which English bowler was better than Australia's worst bowler? Brendan Doggett, right? Carson Stokes are better than Doggett? Is that it? Because then none of those guys are better than Scotty Boland, Mitch Stark, and Michael Leeser.
You mean in this test or in general?
Yeah, in this test match.
I mean, Doggett probably had a better spell than Carson, didn't he? Like, that one spell that he bowled well, I thought, was really important at a good time and really helped Australia, no? Like, it was the one that kind of got... put the pressure, him and Neeson put the pressure back on, which started the rot. Maybe, I think Stokes bowled a couple of spells like that, so I would say that. But Stokes still went for like, what, 4.7 runs and over?
Quite much.
And Carson, I think you're pushing it, aren't you? Like, he bowled wicket-taking balls at times. He also bowled terrible balls at times.
Yeah.
And I don't think Doggett bowled, I think outside of that spell, I think Doggett still struggled. I don't know why Australia's just like... Like, if you just wanted someone to come in and bowl the bouncer spells, couldn't they have just picked someone who is more naturally inclined to bowling those spells? I don't really understand why Doggett is being used, especially once Neeser came in. Like, Doggett, what are you doing? But anyway.
So interesting how you bring up Neeser. Of course, maiden 5-wicket haul for him today, 5 for 42. He is kind of built like a traditional English bowler, though. Isn't he?
Yeah. I think we said... I said yesterday that one of the reasons he gets caught in bowls is because he bowls little outswingers. Not little, but, you know, outswingers, and he pitches it up. And Jimmy Anderson's the guy that's taken those. Obviously, Richard Hadley, who's, you know, another English-New Zealand style of outswing bowler. I thought what was great for Neeser today is that he took wickets with the old... In this test, I should say, he took wickets with the older ball. because he's, I think Australia has this fear, and I've never done the stats, so I don't know if they're correct, but I know from having chatted to people around the team, one of the reasons they haven't used him is they think he's a new ball bowler, and they have so many new ball options, right? Like Cummins is a new ball bowler, and they don't use him. Boland is a new ball bowler, and they don't use him. So how do you fit Nisa into that? I think it was really good for Nisa today that he could show that, no, I know what I'm doing. I can get wickets all the way through. I think that's a fantastic thing for him as a cricketer. And, you know, also, this is a guy that in another era just plays a lot of test matches. Like, I don't know how many people know about Michael Nisa, but, you know, he's quite old now. In a normal era of you know, for a normal team, he would have played an awful lot of test matches. I don't know
if he
had a great record, but he would have certainly played.
Would he have played ahead of Hilfenhaus in the Hilfenhaus era?
No, because when Hilfenhaus was young, he was bowling 90 mile an hour out swingers. I'm not sure. And Nisa maybe quite got close to that, but with the batting. But he was probably better than, they kept waiting for Hilfenhaus to get his speed back, and he never quite did. So he would have taken over from that. Yeah, that era when you had, you know, George playing and, you know, there were times when Nisa, if Nisa was going head to head with Siddle, you would pick Nisa just because of the batting, right? As much as anything. Also the fielding, he's quite a good fielder, Michael Nisa, as well. Yeah. So, yeah, I think in other eras, you could have fitted him in as a really decent third seamer. It's just that they have four ridiculous. I mean, it is, you know, we can make fun of England as much as we want to, and we should and we will. But they are coming to Australia and they are playing fantastic cricketers. Stark's in the form of his life. Boland's barely taken any wickets, and I still think he's bowled better than Stark, right? You know, I just think they've been incredible, and it's hard to say that of England as a team or even as individuals, right?
Yeah, and you keep getting stories, right? Like Jake Weatherall has gotten runs for, like, in his second test match. Nisa's gotten a fifer. He's probably won himself a few more caps. For those of you who want to know more about Michael Nisa, just go to Bharat Sundaresan's Twitter. Anyway, lots of super chats that we have to take, but before that, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Third Innings Live with Bairam and Jared, and we will be back in like half a minute, so go nowhere.
Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the Nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
Welcome back to Third Innings Live. You guys are with Bairam and Jared, and we are reviewing day four of the Gabba Test, a test match which Australia won by 8 wickets on day four. So, yeah, I mean, things are looking quite bleak for England. I suppose Stokesy getting runs is a, like, I don't know, ray of hope, even though it's like, what, 50 off 152? He does kind of show his team how to block.
I actually thought Will Jack's batted better than Stokes today. I don't know how you felt, but... Yeah, that's an interesting one, actually. Because did he look in form or did he look like he wasn't going to go out?
I don't know. I felt like he just wanted to extend this innings as much as he could.
Yeah, which is, and he did it. And I thought he batted perfectly to the situation. But my point being is, does that mean he's in form? Because chances are he's never going to be in a situation again where he has to come in and score 30 off 120 balls or whatever he was at once. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is really good if they have to draw the next test match and they know he's in that kind of form. I'm not sure I looked at him and thought, like, to me, Will Jack seemed to be getting into really good positions, looked like he was picking the ball up well and everything. And I felt at the other end, Stokes was just dead batting, you know, Faf du Plessis style. Don't know why Faf.
I suppose what I kind of, or my takeaway was from that is that this is a team that keeps fishing outside off and loses their wicket every now and then. So at least the captain is kind of showing some restraint. I know a lot of people in the comments yesterday were like, Stokes, he's going to score 150. Hey, he got one third of that. That's something to cheer about. Yeah, he did face that many balls. And that is something to kind of write home about, that an English batter faced 152 deliveries.
Yeah.
Who is not Joe Root, of course.
Look, we said yesterday on the video that we weren't sure what the pitch would do. The biggest chance Australia had of just finishing it early was if the cracks got worse and the sun hit them. That didn't really happen, did it? And so all credit to them. I thought it was hard to score runs and I thought it was hard to take wickets in that first session. Australia probably should have got one. I think they bowled well enough to get one in that period. But I thought both teams, I thought it was a fascinating first session. I really enjoyed it, actually. It was It felt like, especially in a test match where both teams have scored so quick, like England almost scored at 4 runs and over, and Australia was, what, 4.4, 4.5?
Yeah.
And then we just had one session or two sessions in this test match where just neither team scored. So it was a fascinating sort of, I know it's like a grunge song, you know, sort of arc to it at a certain point. But yeah, I thought it was a really, really cool session. It's just going to make England fans angry though, isn't it? Barron? Because they're just why can't, like, Rob Barron's on tomorrow. Isn't Rob Barron just going to say, why can't they do that then more often?
Yeah, of course. I think Rob Barron will be happy with this effort today. I mean, England scoring 241 runs was not on my bingo card,
Rob Barron is not going to be happy with anything that's happened today. Are you mad?
But they scored twice the amount of runs that they do in the first test match. I'm clutching at straws over here. The bowling is the issue, as you point out, because their tactics just doesn't seem like it's the right one for these conditions. But look,
I mean, I don't think their bowling is... I thought they underscored in the first innings. I think I said that at the time. I hope I said that at the time. I do about 83 videos. I do think they gave away a chance to score a lot more runs. I think there was a lot of people thinking 350 to 375 was a good score. I thought it was a bit flatter than that. And you know, once Australia started batting, it certainly looked like that. They have had moments where their batting has looked good, but their batting has never really looked like England's batting has over the last 3 to 4 years, right? Even for the up and down nature, we haven't really seen an innings. We've seen like little pockets. I've said this before. They've got a root century. They've got 3 starts out of Pope and they've got 2 decent knocks out of Crawley, and yet their batting is massively underperformed, right? That's a lot of expensive cattle around those guys. Duckett, Brooke, Smith, who just have not really shown up at all, right? And that is a big problem. The fact that they had to come in with an extra batter in this side.
Yeah, the fact that they had to go full Gautam Gambhir is part of the problem.
I mean, they had hitting down to 10 and, you know, whatever... You give Atkinson
11
hitting plus. Well, I'm not giving the Joffre's just a slogan. He's not real, but Cass can play. Like, you know, Cass is, you know, certainly a bit more proven than Joffre is. But yeah, if you want to go to 11, so the fact that they had to have extra batting to 8 rather than just picking Bashir is, again, it's another bad sign. I mean, if we start listing the bad signs, this show will be 2,000 years long.
Yeah, I mean, they were clearly overprepared, right, for all of it. So anyway, enough chat. Let's move to Super Chats. Ooh, that kind of
like what you
made
did
sense.
There. You can
I didn't
that
do that on purpose. It just happened.
I could tell by your face. You were suddenly like, this is a good line. Who's writing this for you?
All right. Akash asks, alternate universe, no sandpaper, and Smith is Australia's greatest ever captain. So it's interesting how, you know, he was wearing the Chanderpaul black strips or whatever underneath his eyes. And I saw a tweet before this test match where he had, like, he'd been seeing, practicing with them. And someone said, Shivnarain Sandoval. And I was like, that's just pretty much the brilliant or the best sandpaper pun I've ever read.
I'm glad that you've kept that for days. I'm glad that I heard that live. I'd prefer to listen to you say it than read that online. Smith is Australia's greatest ever captain.
I mean, border?
Border's not Australia's greatest ever captain.
Steve Waugh, Don Bradman.
I mean, Steve Waugh and Ricky Ponting's records probably still would have beaten Smith's, I would have said. Yeah, I don't know. I think Cummins has been great. So,
yeah,
like, I don't know. Maybe if I would have to go and check if you combine Smith and Cummins together, but you almost have to take the pain years out of that a little bit.
They've
had a great bowling attack. They, you know, their batting has been a little bit up and down. But yeah, I don't know if I can give you a great answer on that off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's conjecture and we'll never know. Plus, Pat Cummins has done exceptionally well. So
also, Australia's had a lot of great captains. You know, Warwick Armstrong's, you know, the Don Bradman era, Richie Beno, Ian Chappell, you know, Alan Border, as you said before. You know, and some of those, the win-loss records of some of those captains is obscene as well.
Yeah. I mean, of course, it's Australia. The win-loss records are going to be great. Next up, we've got Neutral Standpoint, our Canadian friend. Hi, Jared. I love you. I love listening to and learning from you. Australia believe in old school hard work, rising to the occasion and grinding until you win. They don't do that in this test, though, or the previous one.
I was thinking that too. I mean, you're right. That's what I thought about this morning, though, Neutral, was that the way they played that morning session by just keeping the pressure on the whole way, in a way that, as I said before, England didn't do against Australia's tail, right? I think it just shows that they have, it's a really interesting side. It's old, so this may be the peak of this side, right? Like, who knows what happens in the next couple of years just because of age curves and everything else. But it's a really interesting side at the moment because under Pat Cummins, they got really, really defensive and really pragmatic, but very hard to beat. But now there's a bit more attacking nature to some of their players. And because of that, you know, using head at the top of the order and changing things around a little bit and taking some risks and everything means that right at the moment, I mean, I don't know if Head and Witherall will stay together or how long that will happen, or, you know, that might depend on all different factors, but they suddenly got this really dynamic opening partnership, right? That they didn't have before. So again, it's almost adding to what they did before, which I thought was also quite skillful and everything else. But they do have the ability. This is where they're just a better team than England, right? Mm. Like England, you know, I came in thinking that England might have had the better all-round team, right? But what the thing that England don't have is the thing that Australia have shown in this series, which wasn't always an Australian thing of recent times ever. But right at the moment, what they have is the ability to gear up and gear down, right? And we saw, even when we were having a go at Cameron Green and Steve Smith, they still can do that. They can gear up and gear down. Whereas England, you know, they either have the handbrake on or they're in seventh gear. There's no middle ground for them, right?
And they're resigning it.
Yeah. So it is very, very different.
All right. Neutral Standpoint also has another one over here. He says, if you are failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail. That's England's team in a nutshell. They had 10 days and could play a pink ball game. Well, Jared thinks that that's not the end of the world, but I mean, I feel like England's issue is that they over-obsess about the Ashes and then they make everything about the Ashes. And then when they get hammered in Australia, it's just like major meltdown. They need to curb that or buck that trend or cycle and start just focusing on the World Test Championship cycle, perhaps. I mean,
it's really interesting how much England and England fans don't care about the WTC compared to everyone else. It is fascinating, absolutely fascinating. But just on that point of what Bayram said, if they have learned nothing from this, it has to be that they just have to build a good team and stop fucking around with the Ashes, right?
Yeah.
If they continually make sure that they have a good test team that can win all around the world, I just don't think they need to worry about it. And like, I honestly, you know, I've lived in the UK for so long. It is so weird. It just doesn't, Ashes enter my mind when Ashes are coming up. England people can look at the Ashes like 18 to 24 to 36 months ahead of them, right?
It's been what, so a year and a half? I came to England a year and a half ago. Every press conference, there was mention of the Ashes. And that series was England versus the West Indies. I was often left scratching my head. Like, why? What's up with the obsession? But anyway, clearly Australia know a thing or two about this that England don't. Neutral Standpoint with a very generous super chat. Thanks, man. You dished out a lot of money.
He's on fire.
Yeah. I hate English attitude. Nothing seems to impress them. They behave as if they are better, wiser, and superior to others. Baz says we'll have a beer later today and take days off. Australia deserved to win 5-0.
So I just want to explain this from a professional point of view. This is what I was saying before about them saying the thing for the change room. They should be having a beer later today and taking the day off, right? Hmm. They should be getting around as a team, discussing the game or even clearing their mind of the game, right? Whatever works best for them as a group at this stage. Professional athletes are used to winning and they're used to losing far more than fans ever will be, right? Their whole life is winning and losing, well before you even know their names, right? Because they play so much sport on the way up, professional athletes, right? Their job at the moment is probably, if I was involved with it, I think you have a casual afternoon, or what, I don't even know what time it is over there at the moment, casual night, I suppose, at this stage, or a casual day tomorrow, a lunch tomorrow, where you just chat about what's going wrong, what's going right, and you make it as light as possible, right? And then the coaches and the leadership group go off and they do a hard reset where they look at everything step by step by step. And then they come back to the players in a team meeting and they do that. The other way of doing it is probably what fans want. This is what fans want. Fans want them to do a 4-hour meeting now at the Gabba until it's like 2 a.m. And you can get locked into the Gabba because I have been locked into the Gabba, by the way. They want to basically stay in the Gabba as long as it's physically possible. They want everyone yelling at each other and everything. You can do that as well. And then you need a day off after that anyway. Does that make sense? They have to give themselves some space to work out what they all want to say, or they need to say everything in one emotional outburst and then have some space to come back on it, right? That's the best way of doing it. But here's what I was saying before, Bayram. The problem is when you say that publicly and you don't explain it, and they never want to explain anything anymore. Hmm. That's part of the basketball way, is that a casual fan's just going to read this and be like, what? They didn't give a shit, 5-0, right? That's not exactly what is going on here. But again, they put this on themselves. They were dicks in the early part of basketball, right? They've been so rude at times. They've been so dismissive of genuine questions, right? That you, me, English journalists, overseas journalists had of what was going on. They were dismissive of what people were asking them. That doesn't apply to us. It fucking applies to you, right? And if you can't explain the message, which they haven't always been great at, there were periods where they were better at it, but if you can't explain it, you end up looking like a dick when you go and you say things like this, right? They've got a 5-day golf, the 4-day golf trip planned after this, right?
Oh, nice. Fun.
Now, they would have had that golf trip if they'd won. They shouldn't be canceling their golf trip, right? But again, they have to see how that's going to play.
Yeah. I mean, look, honest conversations need to be had is what Jared is trying to say, whether it's now in an outburst or tomorrow with level heads, but you cannot skip it.
There's no way of doing it correctly. You just have to read the room. I think with England, I think a big issue is, so I don't know if this has happened, and it'd be fascinating, but do you remember the Brendan McCullum meeting in Johannesburg with New Zealand? Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
No.
So that was the meeting that changed New Zealand cricket, basically.
Oh, is it the one in which he comes in without a PowerPoint presentation or something?
No, that was when he applied for the job.
Okay.
So when he had the job after, you know, him and Mike Hessen had sort of moved Ross Taylor to the side. That's the friendliest way I could say that, guys. They had that really bad test. I think it was in Joburg. I could be wrong. Maybe someone in the comments will remember it. But it was wherever it was in South Africa, and they got... And basically, McCullum brought everyone in and went, we're shit. We're not playing properly. We're not playing like we should be playing. We're not playing to the best of our skills. We're not trying very hard. Everyone's worried about IPL contracts, all these other things. And he laid down the truth to them. It feels from the outside that we have... And maybe it just hasn't leaked. It feels from the outside we haven't had that. We haven't had that moment of like, you know, it probably should have happened at the end of the India series where it's just like, guys, we had a chance to win that series and we really let India back in. But there's probably been other times, like the one in New Zealand when they coughed up that test match because they were drinking their own Kool-Aid and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard of that. That is something that I think is interesting, but maybe that'll come out in the next couple of years. But it just feels from the outside, we haven't seen that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no pushback. Everyone's just kind of drinking the baseball rum. Anyway, S1RK992 asks, or it's a request that, sir, please talk about Kohli. Okay. One of the greatest ODI batters ever.
How about I write a book about him and you can buy it in 2 years' time? There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank Andy. You for the free plug for the book.
Yep. Andy 1999 asks, have England actually prepared well considering they've picked bowlers for Australian wickets from 5 years ago? What would you have done differently?
I would have said Jimmy Anderson. This already. Jimmy Anderson. Yeah. I would have picked Jimmy Anderson. I would have. I was really interested to see how Potts might have gone in this series. I think Potts might be, weirdly, the right pace and the right amount of seam movement on Australian pitches for this. I think I mentioned Potts and everyone I knew who had spoken to someone in England cricket was like, they're not playing Potts, Jared. So I stopped mentioning it. But if you listen to kind of the early Ashes stuff, I was talking about Potts a little bit. So Potts and Anderson were the two guys who I think are just a little bit more skillful. And that's the kind of wickets we see. I think Jofra and Wood, I still would have picked. Stokes obviously still would have played, and I would have played Cass occasionally as well. I probably would have maybe alternated Cass and Wood, might have been my thing. Oh, actually, Cass, Wood, and Atkinson, if that makes sense, depending on different pitches for different guys, and maybe given Joffre a rest and Atkinson came in for him or whatever. But I think Potts was someone I was really quite interested in for a while out of how he might go on these kinds of Australian wickets, because Potts seems to me more similar to the modern style Australian bowlers. That are doing really well in Shield cricket. So that was my thinking with Potts.
Okay, next super chat then. We've got Prithvi. He says, India drawing with England and England is looking worse for both each teams with England or India versus South Africa and the Ashes. Look, even when that series was going on, we were talking about how flawed it is, right? Like, both teams were making mistakes, heaps of them.
So. Okay, but if you are the two teams, which one are you betting on for the future? Like
India, because at least I know that they've got a pipeline.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I think you could be the most anti-GG guy in the history. You can hate Galton Gambier. You can have him up on your dartboard. You're not taking England's situation right now, are you? Because the team is older.
Yeah.
You don't really know who your next crop of bowlers are. You're not even sure in this crop of bowlers at the moment. They're gonna have to feel, you know, if this keeps going the direction it is. Number one and number three positions, potentially. And like Ben Duckett's not young. I know he can play on, but Ben Duckett's not young. Ben Stokes is not young. Joe Root probably plays on, but, you know, and Duckett probably plays on, but maybe Stokes doesn't. You would take India. But yeah, I that was a great series to cover, and I really enjoyed it. But we were pretty honest at the time going, these are teams with some flaws in them.
Yep, big time. And that's almost all teams in Test cricket these days, to be fair.
Yeah.
All right, Typewriter says, slightly off topic, but India's two test series wins in Australia look even better in hindsight. The second win was against a better version of the Australian side. They were quite celebrated when they happened as well. So.
Yeah, and they still are held very high. Yeah. I think that was probably before Hazelwood and Stark got to the levels that they have gotten to. And also, did Boland play in any of those series? I don't think he did.
No, he didn't. But, well, the first series that they won didn't have Smith and Warner, so a lot of people went in that direction. But then the next one, India were the team, which had a lot of misses,
right? Incredibly celebrated, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, Kohli was not available for the vast majority of it. The one game he was available for was 36 all out, I think.
36 all out. I mean, any test series away from home, when you lose a test match to start it and you get bowled out for 36 and you come back, even if they hadn't used their bench players and their net bowlers and everything, I think it's still extraordinary. I think Australia learnt a lot from that series. I think Australia's been a much better side because they lost that. But yeah, I think Hazelwood and Stark are much better bowlers now than they were back then. And you probably didn't have Boland. If they had Boland in the side at that stage, and I think he was already pretty much in peak Boland form by that point in Shield cricket, they could have, I think they could have actually, one of the things was India across both of those series kind of just boxed them out, right? Made them tired by the end of the series. And that's why ever since, Australia have looked to rotate their bowlers a lot more because of what India did to them. So I think that made Australia a better series.
Specifically.
Really exactly.
Grinded them out. Okay. I love mutton biryani. Ooh, I do too. Asks, and I thought India was bad last year. At least we're in the game. All except Adelaide. Drop Pope for a bowler. Play Jax at three. He looks so compact. No, it's an option. You're not wrong. Yeah. I mentioned this in one of these shows previously that maybe Jax can be the number three if you want to get rid of Pope and then you can play another bowler.
Again. I dropped out for a second. Yeah, if you're going to have a false three, Will Jax is as good a false three as anyone else. The big issue with Pope, and I keep saying it because I'm like one of the world's leading expert in Popeology, is or Papeology, is that he doesn't get starts very often, and he's had three starts and not converted them. That is a real concern, I think, if you're England at the moment. I thought Will Jax was good in both innings. Obviously, the first innings, he just got done by a bit of a silly shot at a silly time, but I thought he looked compact and good up until that point. In the second innings, I obviously batted really well when the conditions favoured him a little bit more and eventually just got it. I mean, you probably get away with that edge more often than not in international cricket or first-class cricket just because the keeper sort of smothers it a little bit more, right? And, you know, it's very rare that you're going to get someone take a left hand, a stunning catch like that, diving to their left at first slip behind the wicketkeeper's ass like that. Like, so... Yeah. I thought he looked good. I, you know, I mean, I'm not sure I make that move, but I understand the general principle in why you would want to do that.
Okay, next super chat is by Rhythm. He says, Mitchell Stark's biggest advantage while batting is that he doesn't have to bat against Mitchell Stark with a pink ball. I mean, you're not wrong.
The truth is that most people in general bowl better with a pink ball than with a red ball because the averages are lower. But Australia just knows what they're doing a lot more. There are some bowlers who don't bowl particularly well with a pink ball. Obviously, Stokes is probably one of them. But in general, most people know what they're doing. But yeah, I mean, it's a funny point and it's very similar to a short video I made the other day. So yeah, let's go with it.
Yeah. Okay, we've got Kaushal who asks, 5-0 looks inevitable. India versus England, who is less shit? I think we just answered that. At least going forward, India have the better resources. But 5-0, let's see. I don't know. I mean, I get where we're coming from. It seems like one of those Ashes series.
You've never been to Australia, have you?
No, but you know what happened to me in my dream last night? I was in Australia. You, Miriam, and Eek were with me. Eek had long hair. Eek was playing shield cricket. And it was close to the end of the day's play. I tell Eek to just survive the day. You get pissed at me. He gets hit in the head. And then you get more pissed at me. It was a weird dream. Why are you telling my kid what to do at the end of the day? I'm like, isn't that what you tell everybody?
Well, firstly, no, you attack until they call stumps. Also, I'm more pissed off that he missed a hook shot. That's pretty poor from him. there's a thing. Australia is like it's like a big media market, but it's a very bubbled media market, right? Because we don't really have neighbors. New Zealand is across an ocean, right? Even Asia are just above us, quite often speak different languages they're not involved. So Australia is this sort of monoculture. And so what happens specifically in the smaller cities, which is Perth, Adelaide, and Brisbane, not small by city standards, but small by Australian, the smaller ones by Australia. They'd still be bigger than most English cities, those cities. But they basically, like, the test match is all that anyone talks about for that period, because that's the big thing, right? You don't get as many big musicians come over. You don't get as many Hollywood celebrities come to Australia for movies unless their movies absolutely suck. And what happens is it's on every talkback radio station, and it becomes, for a small period of time, much more like Asia, right? But Asia with really loud, obnoxious, toxic masculinity, right? And so what happens when you get behind in Australia is that there is, and the English players, Alistair Cook was talking about it today, is there's nowhere you can go where someone isn't taking the piss out of you, right? True. Where there are times in other cricket countries when you have that, where the other cricket fans will be like, oh, you don't make your runs, but I remember that 100 you made, blah, 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 blah. Even if an Australian brings that up, they're going to bring it up with, you're not making it anymore though, are you? Right? Like, it's, it's always like that. And so I think me and Robbie might have talked about this. It's an incredible place when you're in front to keep your lead, because it's like the entire media and the entire fans collapse on top of you, even though there's not that many people in Australia. Like, Virat Kohli's talked about this heaps before. He loves, being able to go out and do stuff. But the actual conversations are very loud and abrasive and directly at you in a way that it's basically sledging, but off the field, right? And so I'm not saying 5-0 is inevitable, but I wrote before this series in The Cricketer that I could see a situation where Australia won 3-2, especially if England won the first test. And I could, or worst case for Australia, maybe England could win 3-2 again if they won the first test. But if they don't win their first test, I almost feel like the most likely result is 5-0. Right. And having seen England play, be in the game at times and still be, as you said at the start, be absolutely smashed in both of these games, I'm not filled with hope at the moment that England's going to win a test, but they are such a variable side. Fuck knows what they do in the next test. Like, that's the thing with them. If they made 550 and bowled Australia out cheap, I'd be like, okay, I didn't expect it, but okay, that's kind of the thing that they do sometimes.
Next super chat is kind of along these lines. Vaishak says, chasing is England's thing, so why not chase here? Look, I was actually quite impressed with Stokesy for winning the toss twice and opting to bat first, but you never know what Jared just said. Like, there's still a team that can chase anything, so maybe next game they could do something like that.
Yeah, I think to be fair to them, we keep saying baseball with our brains, but they didn't do what we all thought they would do, which is the chasing thing, Vaishak. But probably you're right now. I think they will go back to doing that very soon. The only other thing I would add to this is, to be fair, they are technically chasing because they're 2-0 down now.
True. Sai Bhargav, I'm sorry, I've completely ruined your name, man. Mr. Kumar asks, I was going to write in the super chat, will McCullum be sacked if England go 5-0 down, or will the delusion continue? No one knows what happens if they lose 5-0. Anything could happen.
I think me and Bayram talked about this the other day of, you know, it's not just McCullum. It's Stokes, McCullum and Key, right? So there's a lot of moving parts here. A significant amount of there's going to be pressure on them. And as we've seen before, I just don't think McCullum's in for another rebuild. He's already started rebuilding the white ball team. Now he's going to rebuild the red ball team. And he's going to do it with a hostile media rather than the friendly media he's often had to go up against. And the English media, quite good at being a unified hostile voice when they need to be. Please see the entire 90s. So, you know, it could be fascinating from that perspective as well. We don't know what is going to happen because it could just be such an explosion that everyone loses their jobs, or they could be like, no, you got us into this, get us out of it, right? I mean, I can't tell you what it's going to be because I think they thought even if they lost, they would be in the series. So I don't even think they had prepared. If it gets to 3-4-0, it's England. I expect everyone to be fired, but I'm not sure 100% that will happen this time.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say anything, but 5-0 will be quite bad, especially when you only ever look forward to the Ashes. Samrat, once again, has a super chat. He says, I think both boards need to agree to play a pink ball test. Why do away teams agree to this, given it is such a huge disadvantage? Relatively higher revenues, if any, won't be any material in big series, right? I think they should have 2 out of 5.
Oh, it's way higher revenues. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's so much higher revenues. Yeah, I think Australia... If it wasn't for Perth, Melbourne and Sydney, I think Australia would even think about trying to do all 5 one day. Like, that's how much higher revenues it is.
Gabba and Adelaide could both be pink ball tests.
Yeah, I think teams should say they don't want to play in Guyana if they don't like low bouncing pitches. I think that teams should say they don't want to play at the Wacca or Perth Stadium because it's too bouncy. I mean, what are we talking about here? This is just a part of the game now, right? Like, you have to get good at it and you have to expect it. If you are playing Australia, you have to expect that this is going to happen. Funnily enough, the team that beat them was the West Indies of all the sides. So I don't know, make of that what you will.
True. Varun Gandhi says, since basketball is such a Hail Mary approach, the best chances of it working are at rock bottom. So imagine a fairy tale where England wins 3-2. First since Bradman. I mean, take all of my money if that happens, right?
Like, mate, how exciting is this series if that happens there? It's obviously not likely. But to Varun's point, one of the reasons that basketball is such a fascinating style of cricket is because what England do is they make the game more variable when it's going in one direction. The issue with England is when they don't need to make it variable, they still make it variable. But when they are behind, they do take huge risks, which bring them into games. They've won 2 games when they've been 100 runs behind at the change of innings. They've had all these incredible chases in a period of time. They've made results on pitches that no other team in the history of the game before them. Like, remember when India did it against Bangladesh? Like, that was something that teams didn't even think of doing in Test cricket. Right? But because of what England had done. So they do variables. If they come back from here, I think this would be a much bigger miracle than Bradman. I think this would be bigger than than any comeback we've ever seen in the history of the game. I'm just saying it's slightly unlikely. I'm not sure I need Rushline to have a look at what the percentages are on that one, Beira.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'd love to ask Rushline what the percentages are and also about 5-0, because I want to see which percentage is higher. Right? Which is obvious, it's going to be 5-0. But this is an interesting follow-up super chat, I suppose. It kind of fits in nicely over here. Vardhan asks, day game in Adelaide, or he's telling us that day game in Adelaide is usually flatter and it's going to be hot. So he thinks even a draw wouldn't be bad from an Australian perspective. Look, it's the World Test Championship. They want all points, but I do see where you're coming from because the day-night Adelaide test does change a lot of things. And there was rain in this test match last year, or was it some other test? I think it might have been this one.
The Gabba, wasn't it?
I can't remember, but it was one of these.
You're talking about the one with the India series?
Yeah.
That was the Gabba.
Okay. The Adelaide was where
Gabba gets some tropical storms. Oh, yeah. One was coming in tonight. Adelaide. I don't want to say it doesn't rain in Adelaide, but yeah, it's, you know, the Gabba. If you go to a test match in the Gabba, it's hilarious. I've seen so many fans from around the world do this. They're like, oh my God, it's pouring. We're walking through the streets and the water's up to our ankle. And then the next day they're like, wait, did it rain last night? Like, sometimes they get so drunk, they're not sure if they were right. And I've seen it happen so many times. And it dries out so quickly there. But yeah, so the Adelaide thing is, I don't have my numbers in front of me, but I think, yeah, I don't quite have them in front of me. But the one thing I would, or a couple of things I would say here. One is, there are very few draws in Adelaide, despite the fact that everyone talks about how flat the pitch is. We don't have as many draws over the last few years. He's right, though, that they cut the grass. So one of the reasons they used to leave the grass on was because of the pink ball. And that's why we sometimes see more grass on pitches with pink ball test matches. But yeah, it's if Australia gets a draw. But there aren't many draws in test cricket now when rain doesn't play a part, right? Like, there just aren't. And I, looking and at England's the way Australia... Playing. Yeah, England's playing. And also, looking at the way Australia's playing at the moment, I just don't think that's the case. But you might get into a situation where Smith is like, oh, I can make 300 here. And if that's the case, things change quite a lot, right? Like, you know, Smith or Marnus go large or...
and Travis Head, I mean, it's his home ground. And he smashed India too in Adelaide last year. So,
you know, Green gets going. You know, they've got a couple of guys now that we know have the ability to make, what, 150 plus in that side? Because I think Green...
Hold up, is this 150 as well. Is this the most number of South Australians we've had playing in Adelaide for a while now? Because Jake Witherall has joined Travis Head and Alex Carey. And Carey is keeping like a madman as well. So all
Gillespie
three guys are...
Gillespie and Blewett. I wonder if Gillespie and Blewett ever played with Blocker Wilson. But Blocker Wilson wasn't born in South Australia.
Lehman? So,
Lehman and Gillespie and Blewett in the same side. I don't remember any. Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. So who is it? It's Carey, Head...
And Witherall.
Witherall. They're all born there, aren't they? I think. And then Doggett plays for South Australia as well.
Oh, well, Doggett might not get this game, the next one, Cummins is back.
Well, Lyon, but also Lyon doesn't play. Lyon isn't from South Australia. So it probably depends on how you look at it, but yeah, it's a really good point. South Australian cricket had been in a crisis for a long time. Like, so I don't know, they have originally were part of, like, it was like, New South Wales, Victoria, and South Australia were like the three original pillars of Australian cricket. And South Australia just dropped off the map after the Chappell brothers really struggled for a long time. And of recent times, you know, they've been getting a lot more professional and doing some good things.
Okay, we've still got tons of super chats. Let's go speed round. I need to be somewhere.
Yeah, go.
And anyway, we keep pressing.
By speed round, did you mean take it off?
No. Let's go through them quickly. Chico Roy asks, I think back to last year's BGT and back to last year's BGT and thinks that England is far less a team. Or is it simply a mental blockade, Bazball? No, I mean,
Australia is playing way better this year than they did against India last year. They were a mess, right? I mean, the Constance McSweeney thing and everything. I think they're playing better this year, but they're not playing, they don't have their full strength side as well.
Okay, we've got a very generous super chat by Samit. Thank you. He says, Bazball's issue isn't brainless batting or fickle bowling. It's doubling down on its own Ashes narrative. If you keep saying, judge us on the Ashes, then fair for me to say, run a million miles, get nowhere, same results, just more bluster. I agree with that.
I think most of us, Samit, would agree with you on that. I think I said in one of the previous shows, McCullum's biggest issue was he never changed the thinking that they had only had to win the Ashes. And so even if you want to go, well, look what they did. No one gives a shit, mate. You lost the Ashes and you were aiming at the Ashes. And we all knew you were aiming at the Ashes because you kept saying it.
If I double down saying judge me only on Crick Picks, I'd be out of a job. Right? Chico Roy once again says, you don't have to answer this one, but Perth is such a good example. India's second innings could have been England's and that's a win. That's true. But also, you know, I feel like England... They were acclimatizing and then they just didn't know how to.
I don't think it was. I know a lot of people, because day one was so similar to the India game, think it was the same pitch. I don't think it was the same pitch. So I don't think you would have got. England should have batted better in the second innings. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was the sort of Jaiswal and KL Rahul bat for 2 days or whatever they did kind of pitch.
Yeah. Okay. We've got Shrest Jain, who says India versus South Africa T20s. your 11s for both is Gil in. They didn't pick Jaiswal, is what I know, and that's an abomination. Like, why would you not want to try him before a T20 World Cup, especially when Gil has done his neck? Don't get it.
I might look at the back end of this series. When's the first game? Is it Tuesday or Monday? I can't even remember.
It's Tuesday.
Yeah. So I might watch the series, but I can promise you, Shresh, I could not have thought less about this. I knew about Jaiswal. I mean, that's about all. Like, I worry about it when it happens. I don't look at T20 bilateral series beforehand. This is the time I'll start looking at T20 because of the World Cup coming up. But even then, it's usually going to take a secondary place behind tests.
We're going to have to open the squads for this, buddy. So that's a bit of a stretch. But let's just say left-right combinations.
No, we have no idea who they're going to have. Yeah. I think
a lot of all-rounders.
I
can tell you that. Neutral standpoint, again, I feel like he spent his paycheck on us today. Batters chipped in 850 run partnerships, bowlers taking wickets and giving 100%, superb fielding and wicket keeping, spot on tactics and game awareness. Yeah, Australia did all of those things.
Australia have been exceptional without a lot of quality members to their side. You cannot say enough positive about what they have done. From the moment, really, I suppose it was before that, but from the moment Boland bowled well, and I was like, oh, wait, they're ready for this. And then Head came out. They have just looked so good in this series, right? After a bit of a shaky start, they've looked incredible.
Yeah. And Nasser Hussain said, right, that England have been out bowled, out batted, out caught, and out thought. So yeah, that's basically where we're at.
Australia is really good at preparing for test series in a way they never used to be, even under Steve Smith. They are so much better at thinking about tactics coming in now. I really like the way they think about games.
Yeah. Cypher993 asks, why no Lyon? Is it pace only now for day-night tests? I mean, even when he has played day-night tests in the past, in the recent past, how many overs has he bowled?
So there's no time to bowl him in any games anymore. The reason they didn't pick him is not just because it was a day-night test. It's they thought it was going to do more, so they were wrong. He should have played in this game had they known what the wicket was. But when it comes down to it, there was always a chance he wasn't going to play all the Ashes tests. I've been reporting on that for a year. And the reason I've been saying that is because his overs have been diminishing. So if you're not bowling him, what's the point in picking him? And I think eventually they got to that point of like, not only are we not bowling him, we might as well strengthen our batting a little bit with Cummins out of the side and bring Nisa in, which, you know, you could still argue that Australia would have been stronger if Doggett had been out of the side and Lyon had played in that spot. But that wasn't what the spot was between. It was between Nisa and Lyon, right?
Yep. All right. Kunal asks, will Hazelwood even appear at the Ashes? We don't know. I've read somewhere that he's messed up his rehab.
Yeah. The original injury sounded really bad. And then like a couple of days later, they were like, oh no, it's fine. We've tested him. I think something went wrong. And I haven't got to the bottom of it. It might be something for someone like Barrett, or Chris Barrett, or all the Barretts actually, to get to the bottom of. But I'm not over there, so I can't ask any questions. But I feel like something went wrong. It may not have been like their fault or anything, but something they weren't expecting to happen has happened there. It's still a chance for the end of the series, isn't it? Like, Stark may not want to miss a test, but if they're like 4-0 up, surely you say to Stark, sit this one out, son.
Yeah. K Nayam, or Nayam, if the K is silent, which would be really cool. I've never seen that in a name. Asks, it seems England's team's focus is primarily revolves around the Ashes. Yep, we've spoken of that. Often neglecting other series when they treat every other match as prep for Ashes and then things don't go as planned. It reflects poorly. It makes no sense with the World Test Championship existing. That's the whole issue.
I'd say it never made any sense because I think one of the reasons Australia is better than them is because Australia is constantly trying to just be a better cricket team, not be a better cricket team for specific circumstances. I mean, England were aiming themselves at circumstances that we knew no longer existed for this series. We knew that the pitches had changed, right? So I don't know. It's not for me. It's a no.
Okay. Andy, 1999, asks, which was the better team, the Kohli Shastri India or this version of Australia? I mean, even the Kohli Shastri India has a couple of renditions to it, right? It's not the same team.
India was probably a bit slightly better than this side, weren't they?
Yeah, because you've got Ashwin Jadeja
in India. You've got batting too.
Yeah.
And then you've got Siraj, Bumrah and Shami.
But do we have Siraj, Bumrah and Shami all three together in that team at any point?
I'm not sure if they were, but I'm saying that's your frontline three bowlers, though, isn't it?
That's what I was thinking, right?
And then with Ashwin and Jadeja, with Akshar as your backup spinner and Umesh Yadav and Ishant Sharma as your backup seamers. I mean, it's a pretty good team.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty good team. Yeah. I don't think there's any dominant team in the world at the moment. I know Australia's playing great cricket. I think South Africa is rightly thought of as the best team marginally at the moment. Australia might take that over by the end of this series if it's that dominant. But there's no real dominant team. Even Australia still has weaknesses. As we've seen, I was going to say at times, very briefly at times in this series.
Yeah. All right. PG Back asks or tells us that medium pace dominating Ranji, Shield and County, what the fuck? Add the Asia Cup to that. It killed Varun to see Shivam Dubey do well.
wobble ball, extra stuff on some of the cricket balls around the world, and a little bit more grass. It feels like countries are putting more grass on their wickets. In the Ranji and the Shield, I wonder if that was slightly on purpose. In county cricket, that's just what they do. But it's not just in those competitions, by the way. It's everywhere.
Yeah. Last super chat of the day, hopefully. Chico Roy, it's a generous one. Thank you. He says, I love you guys. We love you too. Can you do fan podcasts? How do I sign up? We've never thought about that one.
It's quite hard, and there's bunches of reasons, and I won't bore you with it, Chico. We used to have something before Bayram even started where I forget what it was called, but it was the old Locker Room app where fans could ask the questions. There was mixed results because sometimes someone would ask a 3-minute question from outside while chewing. we want to be more involved with the fans in the future. Obviously, we do heaps of chats and we do Q&A shows and everything else.
Yeah.
If you come on the Discord, you almost have a live access to all of us anyway. Well, me, I don't know. The rest of you guys never go on the Discord. You're always moaning about things in the in our WhatsApp chat. You should be on the Discord moaning about it there. But
yeah, we could be.
But yeah, so I think there's definitely an element of that as well. But yeah, there are things that we're trying to do in the future. A lot of it is just technology based. Unfortunately, at the moment, the technology isn't quite where we need it to be for the stuff that we want to do. But yes, I watch the space is all I can say on that.
Also, if Varun and I take our relationship to Discord, people are going to freak out and unsubscribe. There's also that element, right?
I mean, I want to do that from our WhatsApp group, so you're probably right.
Anyway, speaking of Discord, just to tell all of you guys, all of our shows at the Good Areas Network are powered by our supporters on Patreon. It's a lot of fun there. You can become one of them by going to patreon.com/Good Areas Podcast, and that way you can talk to us exclusively, enjoy ad-free content, you can give us podcast recommendations, and maybe we can take this conversation further as well, Chico Roy. And that wraps this show up. These days, the Super Chats go on for 45 minutes, and we're talking for the other 20. But that's how it's been.
I actually feel on today, that was a good show for today, but yesterday, the comments went out of control yesterday. Like, people were just not listening to what we were saying or whatever. Today, it's a lot of people, I think, with really interesting, I know that some of them are a bit repetitive, but with some really interesting thoughts. And everyone's had a chance to think. Yesterday, it was just like, let's burn them at the stake. And it's like, we can burn them at the stake, but how should we burn them specifically? Yeah. Do we want them medium rare? Do we want them, barbecue sauce on it? What are we looking for here? So I thought it was a really good show. So to go back to Chikoi's thing, that's why I love interacting with the fans. It's a great advantage that we have on this network that we can do that. And thank you to everyone who supports us. Every comment, every like, every share, every subscribing, Patreon, Discord, any way you can help us. Thank you so much. We're obviously trying to build something quite big and we're hopefully on the way. And I'd like to apologize because we were out and then Bayram had to read this.
Yep, last super chat now officially. Samrat asks, or it's a follow-up, he says, I meant since the cricket boards have an option of not playing a pink ball test, why hand Australia that advantage? I feel it's unfair given others don't play, but I understand the reasons why they
as
play.
I said, I mean, that's like saying India shouldn't be allowed to pick 3 pitches that spin, right? It's a form of test cricket that exists now. It is always going to exist from here on in. It is only going to have more day-night matches. What if Australia go, we only play day-night matches then? Like, how would you even do that? So it's a non-starter, mate. As I said, you go to a country, they have conditions, you have to handle it. The pink ball is part of playing in Australia now. Teams weren't playing particularly well in Australia before the pink ball, if you want to go 20 years before that. So it ain't the pink ball why you're losing, right? This was a test match that England had plenty of chances in.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you for all of your super chats. We are super grateful for them. Oh, and look at him.
He's on fire today. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been a constant throughout the last 4 days. I hope you've enjoyed these third inning shows. We certainly have. And just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That way you can have that page as your one-stop shop for all of our fun work that we do as part of this team, whether it's written content, videos, podcasts. I'm 45 minutes late to a lunch thing that I had to go to. So everyone, take care. We'll see you soon enough. Have a good one and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.